What's happening in dentistry right now is dentists are abdicating, they're not delegating, they're abdicating these roles to our team members. And as soon as there's some sort of pushback, they just fall down to the one crown.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder. Pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Although this is kind of a podcast episode, kind of a just a sharing information episode, right, Brett?
That's right.
Yeah, so I'm super excited to be joined by Brett from DigiDoc today to just talk about, I mean, really kind of like the dental industry, what's going on, life, et cetera, right?
That's it.
Yeah, so this will be fun. I'm excited to do this. So if you haven't listened to the podcast before, hey, go check it out. It's a free podcast, Millennial Dentist Podcast. You can get it on iTunes, Spotify, you know, all the places that you get podcasts. And if you don't know Brett and DigiDoc, well, Brett, before we get going, why don't you, first off, just introduce yourself, and then let's just dive into it.
Hello, everyone. Brett Wilson with DigiDoc. Family-owned business, digital technology, intro cameras, sensors, handled x-ray. We have products, but we're passionate about helping doctors solve problems, right? Grow business, grow revenue. And that's what this conversation is about. Just have a conversation in the industry of...
How long have you been in the industry, Brett?
22 years, personally.
You don't seem old enough to be in 22. You've aged well, Brett.
In a little bit.
22 years. I'm 30. Wow, I'm not 20. I'm 35 now, so... Right, I'm just kind of, okay, so keep going, 22 years.
22 years.
All with the same company?
Not quite.
Okay.
So although it is a family-owned business, I got started in the family business, spent a few years in the dealer network.
Okay.
A couple startup companies, back to the
family. Very cool.
In 13.
Okay. So you've kind of been, you've been around dentistry for 22 years.
That's right.
Wow. Very cool.
Yes. See a lot. That's why I'm passionate about this, is the questions that we ask in the field, I want to bring more exposure to the solutions.
Yeah.
And so with that, I'm recognizing, I mean, we see in the industry the increasing costs. There's things that are happening in the industry that are causing some pain points and with doctors. But that case acceptance piece, I'm real curious about how you feel on doctors increasing case acceptance, but I really feel like it's that piece of them taking that step into the type of dentistry they want to do more of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do we help doctors really identify what that looks like in not just case acceptance, but more of the dentistry that they love?
Yeah. No, it's funny. A quote comes to mind. A buddy of mine said, winning is a good deodorant. And I like that, because it's like when you're in a situation like we are right now, where the luxuries we had as dentists from a standpoint of like lower overhead, lower team cost, lower supply cost, a lot of those things are squeezing us. And I think the industry as a whole is feeling it. And you know, you got two options. Option one is that you do more of what you're doing. You go more of a volume game, more insurance, more people, more fillings. And like, that just seems exhausting.
Right.
Like that's the hamster wheel approach. Like, I just gonna run faster. And the problem I see is like, you just can't run fast enough at some point. Like, and that robs you of your time that you get with your family, your time doing hobbies, time doing whatever it is that you love to do. And so the other approach, which I think is the correct approach, is that we leverage technology, we leverage our access to education, and which is greater than it's ever been before, to do more of the procedures that we like to do, which are typically, if you think about it, more profitable procedures.
Correct.
And so therefore, then you're able to deal with the rising costs, the rising things, and still maintain the living you want to have and doing more of the stuff that you love to do.
So the education piece is critical. Like, you have to have the skills,
yes,
in the type of procedures that you're passionate about. But then transitioning that into the practice and how you communicate to patients. So getting kind of practical with what that looks like and some tools, I'd love to hear from you just how you feel personally in presenting to patients.
Yeah.
Leading a team. Verbal skills on what that looks like.
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there.
There is.
That's good.
This is multiple shows, but if we can hit some high points in these areas, I believe it really impact.
Yeah, I think one thing I would start by saying is, I thought you hit the nail on the head, is that I think by and large, we don't necessarily have a clinical skill problem. meaning that people think in their mind that, like, I got to just go take more CE in the clinical skill area. And I think that's probably where we're on some level overeducated, meaning I run into doctor after doctor after doctor that's done. They've done COIS, they've done SPEAR, they've done all these continuums, yet they're still doing single tooth and quadrant dentistry, which where none of those actual curriculums come into play until you start to get into aesthetics, facial stuff, comprehensive treatment planning. And so I really don't think that it's a clinical skill problem. I think it's a fundamental case acceptance problem because most doctors don't have a good buying process. And to me, that's kind of fourfold. Number one is are you leveraging the diagnostic communication techniques and skills to maximize things? To me, like, number one is photography, right?
Sure.
Like, that fits into what y'all do. You know, I lean on extraoral photography, intraoral photography. It's if I can show someone, they're higher likely to say yes than no. I mean, like, everybody knows this, right? That's what's funny to me is that if I take an intraoral photo of a broken down tooth and I put it in someone's face, how hard is that to sell? Like, it's not, right? I mean, most patients will say yes. Yet, when was the last time that dentists took pictures of someone's smile and put it in front of their face? It was like, do you want to improve that?
Amen. Consistently.
Consistent, not like once, not when the patient asks, but like every time I'm going to show someone their smile, I'm going to show someone their arch of teeth, and I'm going to ask, I'm going to be curious. Have you seen that, what's that show on Apple TV that was like super famous? The guy's a soccer coach. You know what I'm talking about? It's going to kill us. Everybody's like yelling it in their ears when they're listening to this. But anyway, he talks about being curious. There's a great scene that talks about being curious.
Sudeikis?
Yes, Jason Sudeikis. Yeah, it's him. Go Google that show and the Be Curious. He's about him throwing darts, and he basically pulls one over on the British coach guy. It's a really cool scene. I love the scene, but it talks about being curious, and I think that's a challenge that dentists don't have is we're not curious enough. We don't ask, hey, Brett, do you like your smile? Brett, is there anything that you've ever wanted to know about what you could do with your teeth? Has this recession ever bothered you? Have you ever noticed this recession? Do you like the color of your teeth? We're not curious enough. We live in a cavity and gum disease world. Does that make sense?
100%. And typically those images are taken on the new patient exam.
Yep.
And then when they come back for the recall.
Yep.
6 months, a year, 18 months later.
Absolutely.
How many times do we really go back and view that?
Yeah. And I think photographs should be something that we're taking on an annual basis. Like, we take bite wings every year, but we'll take photos one time and then not leverage them. So, like, to me, like, that's my number one thing is dentists are not using photography to maximize it. Now, and you could talk about, like, cone beam, obviously, is another one, no-brainer. Digital impressions now are great. But to me, it all starts with photography. The second question, I think, is more of a communication skill, is are you asking patients if they'd like to get all their dentistry done in one visit? I think that's a staple question for us, in that I'm trying to move beyond the crown of the year club.
Yes.
I mean, do you see that? Like 100%. Patients come in, you know, these doctors, they do one crown this year, one crown next year. And Ted Lasso. Yes. Way to go. Ted Lasso. So Google Ted Lasso and be curious. And you'll enjoy the scene. But yeah, so I digress. But it's the crown of the year club type stuff. And to me, what avoids that is encouraging patients, leading patients with communication to choose to do all of their dentistry and as few as one or two visits.
Talk a little more about that. Like, how do you present that to the patient versus it just being the one crown? How do you deliver that language to them to do more?
Yeah, so I do it a couple ways. One is I like to use the herd effect. So I'll say, Brett, most patients in a situation like this typically like to get their dentistry done in as few as one or two visits. Is that something you'd be interested in doing? And so most people don't want to go against the grain. So if I tell them that's what most people are doing, then there's that language is guiding them into choosing what I want them to do.
Yes.
If I say most people do these one at a time, what's the patient going to choose? They're going to choose one. So it's a very simple thing that now, and then what I assume that the listener is hearing in with a question that should be getting asked then is what becomes the next question or the challenge to that? You ask the question, the patient's interested, but then what are dentists going to say is the pushback to getting that to actually happen?
You know the answer.
Money.
100%.
It's always going to be, the dentist's excuse to why they do single tooth dentistry is always going to be money. And so then the question is asked is, do you have some sort of financial process in place to make dentistry more affordable. Like, Brett, what do you think? How many people can actually afford 3 crowns, 2 fillings, and an implant? Like, think about that. That's $1,000 a tooth for a crown. That's $3,500. You know, you get an implant. That's probably $4,000 or $5,000. We're a $7,000-$8,000 treatment plan.
Statistically, consumers over $1,000, 80% of them finance it.
Yes. And so why do you think that we're so freaking good at closing single tooth or quadrant dentistry that's primarily driven where insurance is paying 50% and the patient's out-of-pocket is below $1,000?
If we're not talking monthly payments to patients, they
yes.
are a consumer in the chair. Let's connect with that.
Right. And like I'm sorry, Brett, but like you can't rapport these people into being able to afford more.
Right.
Like I can't be like kind enough, empathetic enough, likable enough. Like there's nothing that you can do to overcome the fact that some people just don't have the money. And so if you want to do things differently, meaning you want to be more comprehensive, then you've got to have a menu of ways that people can pay for things. And so I look at a healthy practice, and a healthy practice finances somewhere between 20 and 30% of the dentistry they do. That would be healthy to me.
Agreed.
And I bet most dentists listening to this, they're below 5%. And think how good would a car dealership be, Brett, if their financing for the year was 5%?
Wouldn't be in business.
It wouldn't be a business.
That's right.
Unless they had insurance, and then they'd sell one part of the car at a time until the dentist could pay for the whole car. Does that resonate?
100%. It really does.
So to me, that's the thing is like, and what I want to be clear on, I don't mean in-office payment plans. Like, I think there's a time and a place for that, but that's not my recommendation. There are so many financial companies out there from a third-party standpoint that will do this for you. Some that are interest, some that are no interest. You know, companies we use, Proceed Finance, Sunbit, Cherry, Alpheon, I mean, PatientFi. And we use all those because one may get approved with this person and the other denies this person, but another one approves that person.
One may run a special where they have no payments for a low
yes.
interest rate, but watch the fees. I mean, do be mindful of the fees that are being charged to the practice.
Well, no, so let's talk about that because that's a great point. Because the number one reason dentists then hear why I don't want to finance stuff is because of the fee. And that is, respectfully, it's small-minded thinking because if you're going to finance the dentistry you're already doing, then it would. Meaning, Brett, do you have a problem closing? If you're a dentist, what dollar amount do you think that you start having trouble closing dentistry when it gets above what patient out of pocket?
Out of pocket, over $10,000.
Perfect. So guess where I would introduce financing into your practice? I would say $10,000 out of pocket is now that's where it gets introduced as something we're offering our patients. Now I'll tell you the number is way lower. Meaning I think the number is probably somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 where that's when we need to start to introduce this. And this is like, gosh.
I put myself on a really high level, by the way.
You did put yourself on a high level. But I want to slow down a minute because this is a really, really, really crucial concept that people have to understand. What is dentists' most valuable or what is their most expensive thing?
Staff.
No. It's a good one and it is a big one. But what's their really most expensive thing? What's the most expensive part of a dental practice? Do you know? I'm going to teach y'all something today. This is good. The number one expensive thing is the doctor, the dentist. The dentist, by the way, makes up the entire same percentage as the team.
Correct.
In most dental practices, the team makes up somewhere between 25 and 30%. That's what our... And guess what the dentist gets paid? 30%. You realize that? The dentist is the most important... exposed expensive part of the time. So therefore, the most expensive part of the dental practice is the dentist's time. And so what people do is they think, oh, well, my cost of a crown is $150. No, the cost of the crown is the 2 hours the dentist books for the time. That's the real expensive part. The $150 for the crown, the hard cost is pennies on the dollar.
Right.
So now what I would ask, and so now what you would do is I would do, if that was you, Brett, I would say, well, what does it cost? What does it cost a dentist? How much time would they book for one crown? Most dentists would say, I'm going to use easy math because I'm a millennial, so I need a calculator. But let's say that most dentists book an hour for a crown. Non-CEREC. Let's just do CEREC because I like CEREC. So let's say they book 2 hours for one crown.
Which is long, but we'll give you 2 hours.
You want to do 1 hour? Let's do 1 hour for one crown.
1 hour.
How much time am I going to book for two crowns? That dentist is going to book for two crowns.
Probably going to book at least two.
Do you think they book 2 hours? No, she says no.
Well, typical.
Okay, so that'll say they book two. Now, that's fine. Now, how long are they going to book for three?
Should be around two. For three crowns.
If I'm doing two crowns, I book 2 hours. But if I book three crowns, I do 2 hours. We're on the same page, correct?
Yes.
So now, what's the profitability of the third crown?
Profitable.
It's super profitable.
Yeah.
Because the cost, in fact, it's almost all margin. It all goes to the bottom line, except for the hard cost, because the time has already been paid for.
Right.
Now, let's say, how much time are you going to book for four crowns?
Depends on how many millet chambers we have.
Now, let's go up to eight crowns. How much time is a dentist going to book for a whole arch, 14 crowns?
You do it all the time. Lay it on us.
Maybe you're going to book a morning. So now I'm at 4 or 5 hours. So my point is, do you see, as I go up in the amount of dentistry I do, the time doesn't just, I don't book 1 hour per crown, or I'm booking, it's a 10-hour appointment for 10 crowns.
Right.
So what I mean by that is that we're looking at this the wrong way, in that, yes, if I finance my one crown appointment where the patient's already saying yes, then it is going to cost me that 10 or 15%. Because if I didn't offer them financing and they had paid for it, I would have gotten that 10 or 15%. You follow me?
Yes.
When you introduce financing, it needs to be at some point where the patient wouldn't have said yes. Meaning you don't get the 85% if you don't give away the 15%. Now, if I were to ask dentists, there's $100 on a table and I'm going to give you 85 times over and over and over, you got to give me 15. How many dentists are going to say no to that? We whine about that all the time. And to me, that's silly, because that patient wouldn't have said yes to that. So my point in this is, you should have rules with third-party financing. Meaning third-party financing shouldn't come into play until you get to $1,500, $2,000, or $2,100. Because we know that patients below that are going to pay for it. But if you want to go from a practice that sees 12 patients a day, and I'm talking like in the dentist columns, to a practice that sees 6 patients a day and does the same amount of dentistry, because who wouldn't want that? That's working smarter, not harder. Then you're going to have to start leveraging financing to make it happen, because you got to make dentistry more affordable.
Agreed. And you have to be willing to bring up the conversation with the patient. You don't walk the entire patient through the financial process, but I bet you at least bring it up.
Yeah. And that's
attached to your team.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So that's a great point. The whole goal of case presentation is to get the patient to ask how much. Like when people bring up money, I love that, because when you talk about money, that's a buying question. Like, people don't ask how much. People don't ask what are the ways to pay for it if they don't want it.
Exactly.
So, like, first off, dentists, we should get excited when someone says how much or brings up money, because that's a buying type of question. The next thing is, we have to automate this. So if it's reliant on me to sell it, that's problematic. If it's reliant on one specific team member, I would argue that's problematic. So what we recommend is that there is an automated menu, whereas you put the treatment in, you put the number in the document, and then it spits out all the options of ways to pay for it.
Yes.
And every patient gets this. So I don't have to say, Brett, would you like financing or would you not like financing?
How do you phrase it to the patient? So as you're working that up, your team's working that up.
Mm-hmm.
So as the doctor, how are you delivering that to the patient and then your team taking over?
Well, I'm a believer that I don't believe that dentists should not talk about money.
Agreed.
So I'm a believer that if I answer questions people ask. So if Brett, if you ask me what some, say you need clear aligners and then you want to do four crowns. So like this is it's a $10,000 treatment plan. So I presented the treatment plan and then you ask how much.
Doctor, how much is this going to cost?
Great question, Brett. Unfortunately, dentistry is super expensive. Something like this is going to cost around $10,000 or something like $400 to $500 a month. What I can promise you is, before you leave here today, you will know exactly what it costs, how you can pay for it, what we're going to do, and how long it's going to take.
Standard line, the dentistry is expensive.
Just four promises. Yeah.
Okay.
Because first off, I empathized. Dentistry is expensive. Like, let's acknowledge the elephant in the room.
Sure.
Number two is, I'm going to give you the fee. I'm not going to skirt around the fee. But I'm going to follow that with monthly payments. Because if I tell someone it's $10,000, I'm immediately like, can't afford it. or something like $300 to $400 a month. Now all of a sudden, what that patient then hears is, okay, I can afford $300 to $400 a month.
Yes.
And then the four promises, I mean, how reassuring is that to just watch the patient kind of like the stress go off there when they know, hey, before you leave, you're going to all this stuff. Well, and that's the perfect handoff to the team member.
It is. You're delivering with the certainty. So many, I feel like, don't want to even touch the financial conversation. And you're not getting into the weeds.
No.
But you're confident enough to deliver the line, the message, total fee, ballpark breakdown. You don't have to know the exact.
Yeah.
But know what it's going to be for $10,000, $15,000,
$20,000. You do.
Get the ballpark down and be able to deliver that.
And, you know, I'll be honest, Brett. A lot of people ask, well, how do you do it? And I go, you're asking the wrong question. What you should ask is how I did it. Like, how did I do it when I got started? Right? Because you're not jumping into my office with my team, my infrastructure, my people. When I got started, Brett, I would present the treatment. I would go over the financials. I would log in to Sunbit and help them fill out the application, because I'm not going to delegate my success to somebody until I know that they can handle it. And I think that's a lot of what's happening in dentistry right now is dentists are abdicating. They're not delegating. They're abdicating these roles to our team members. And as soon as there's some sort of pushback, they just fall down to the one crown.
Love this.
And so I really think that, like, you as the dentist, whether you're going to do it long-term or not, you got to be able to at least have the accountability that you're seeing what happens when I hand it off and how did I end up with no treatment or minor treatment or just some treatment.
Talk about caring too much for the case for the patient. And the challenges that you've experienced with that. Because there's a fine line to where you can want it more for the patient than they want it for themselves.
Yep.
And essentially almost not caring whether they do the treatment or not.
Brett, we're going to pause this episode because I'm liking to stay around 20 minutes. And then we're going to do a second episode. So if you want to know that answer to that question, you got to come back for more. You got to watch next week.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.